Brian Had a Dream, 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello, I'm Ben.
And I'm Brian.
And you are listening once again to The Quest for 10,000, our audio journey with Brian as he tries to watch 10,000 movies before he turns 40. In this episode, we're back from a long hiatus. Real world jobs are hard, y'all. But we're going to talk about recent comments in the film industry by Steven Spielberg in this episode. Should Netflix films be considered for Oscars? Or Spielberg right, and they are TV movies. We'll talk about that. Brian will give his top five Netflix original films, and we'll see what else happens. But Brian, we begin, as we often do, with where are you on your quest?
As of this moment, I am at 9,116.
Oh my goodness. Over the 9,000 mark. It has been a while since we recorded and asked that question.
And I've been crushing it lately, as far as, you know, number of movies per day. And part of that is because I've been trying to go through and make sure I'm very familiar with 19th century cinema, which is really to say 19th century home movies, but.
As we all should be familiar with
that
genre.
Yeah, we should be.
Okay, so what's the last movie you watched?
I don't know if it was the exact last thing, but one of the things I saw was this, not a short movie, but a long movie, a 4.5-hour documentary on HBO about Gary Shandling, and it was fantastic. It was lovely. Some things I didn't really know about him. He's a complicated guy, but some behind-the-scenes stuff from Larry Sanders' show, which is great. It's Gary Shandling's show, which I haven't seen, but obviously need to. And just very, very, very funny, kind of inside baseball in a way kind of thing, but just a great movie.
Now, that's the two-part documentary done by Judd Apatow.
Yeah, The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling, by Judd Apatow, yeah.
So do you count those as two movies or one?
No, just one. Yeah, I know it was released in two parts, but, you know, It's one long movie, because like some of that's just because of the mechanisms of distribution. If they put it out as 4 hours, nobody would watch it. If you put it out as two-hour parts, people will watch it. So
have you seen Kill Bill Volume 1 and Volume 2?
Yes, and I count those as separate because they came out years apart. Now, when you talk about something like, and I'm of two minds about this particular one, but when you talk about Grindhouse, which included Death Proof and Planet Terror, I count Planet Terror and Death Proof as two different movies. Some people count them. Some people would say you can watch Death Proof, you can watch Planet Terror, or alternatively, you can watch both of them together and count it as a third movie because it's a different experience. I don't normally do that.
All right, so this may be one of the few times that we might consider putting an asterisk by your number when we finally get to 10,000, but we'll let others and the annals of history decide that one. Something I think we need to do now, too, we often ask you what the last movie you saw, but what's the next movie that you have queued up, do you think?
The next movie I have queued up. Well, that's a very good question. What am I going to watch tomorrow? Well, since I'm on this Gary Shandling trick kick, one of the things I'm going to try to watch is his before he did either one of his shows, he had a fake 25th anniversary special for he created this fake 25th anniversary for a talk show that he hosted, and it came out in like 1981-82. It was the 25th anniversary of Gary Shandling's talk show. So I may watch that, but I'm not sure. That's a very good question. Maybe a Looney Tunes short, maybe. That may be the next thing I see.
You just missed your chance to tell us about the thrilling nature of 19th century cinema and how highly you were anticipating that. But we'll get to that next time. Just be ready for that. That'll be a regular question.
It is very raw and very very visceral.
We can all hardly wait to hear more. Be prepared for that question, though, in future episodes, as we get closer and closer to 10,000, that's something that we'll begin asking and talking about.
Well, let's just put it, I think I just eclipsed 200 movies pre-1900.
That is astonishing.
It's sad, really. But.
And again, another thing we said, you watch some movies, so we don't have to, and I'm going to think at least 90% are in that category.
Yeah.
Let's get on to our big topic. And let's talk about these recent comments from Steven Spielberg in a lot of the media he's doing to promote Ready Player One.
Yeah.
He somehow got on the topic of Netflix movies and basically told, I think it was one of the British media outlets he was talking to, maybe ITV, that he didn't think, he thought movies released in a television format should be television movies, and didn't think that them meeting sort of the minimum requirements of being shown in theaters for a couple of weeks should allow them in to be considered as films the same way as theatrical releases would be. So what I'd like to do on this, rather than just say if he's right or wrong, is I'd like to kind of break down the argument and talk about, you know, what are the pros of the point he's trying to make, and what are the cons, maybe, of the point he's trying to make about that, and maybe the reasoning behind those and that kind of thing. So, you know, where do you see Spielberg being right in this debate? Should Netflix movies be considered for Oscars?
Well, when he says that they are TV movies. In essence, he's saying they're no different than like your Saturday night TV movie that was a staple of our adolescence. And in that point, I think he's probably, there's a lot of stuff on Netflix that is subpar quality. I mean, it is put there to, you know, I've seen an article recently that asked, was Netflix the new direct-to-DVD dumping ground?
Right.
And I wholeheartedly think that's accurate. That now, why would you go through, and part of that is economics, why go through printing and mailing and shipping and putting the casing together for a million DVDs for a product that you know is really not that great when you can just push a button and push it out available to 3 million people. So in the hope that somebody watches it, I think that it's just much cheaper and easier to do so. But I think where he misses the point is that, sure, there is a lot of horrible stuff that is coming out on Netflix or just filling up people's, you know, feeds or whatever for new release. But have you been to a movie and not seen the horrible movies that go out in the theater? like, how is it any different?
Right. So you're saying he has a point in that many of the films are subpar.
They are.
You know, maybe the first thing we should say is that this is not necessarily Spielberg's not the first person to make this case, and he probably won't be the last. Christopher Nolan talked about it as well, and I think Nolan and Spielberg are trying to say that this idea of streaming everything affects the theater movie going experience, and that it potentially hurts the economic livelihood, at least, of those who work in the theaters, the places that allow us to see movies in the first place. And so what do you think of that argument? Do you buy any part of that?
I agree. I think they are right, that it is changing the way in which we approach content as far as media goes. You know, we don't, the lines between quite a while back, you know, there was a real distinct line between TV star and movie star. Okay, and you kind of knew which side of the line most people were on. Very few people could cross over from TV star into movie star. You know, I remember a big deal when we were younger, Shelley Long, when she left Cheers to try to go and make it as a movie star, failed miserably. David Caruso tried to make it as a movie star, failed miserably.
Yeah,
because they were two different worlds.
Right.
You know, and it was like, you're in your zone. And it was always sort of understood, if not outright said, TV stars are lesser and not as important. Like, that was the way, you know, you just always sort of, the way they were treated was, this is not the same thing. This is not the same kind of, we're doing art, they're doing entertainment. You know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Right.
And I think some of that is that same sort of elitism that's coming on now, although I think for most people, the line between TV star, movie star, Netflix star, whatever, is really, really blurry. Like, it is really, to the point where I'm not sure there is a line anymore, as long as the content of what you're doing is good. So.
Yeah. So you tend to agree. I think, you know, we should expand. One of the things that Spielberg said too is that fewer and fewer filmmakers are going to struggle to raise money or to go compete at Sundance. This is a quote from the Hollywood Reporter from the interview he gave ITV. So I think his thing too is that you know, not only the theater chains that might make it harder for movies to get to the public in some ways, that part of the industry will be hit hard. But even these things like Sundance and Cannes and stuff like that will get hit. And I tend to agree with you. Yeah, it's obvious there's been a sea change here. And so those things are going to be affected. And we don't know yet how they could be. And it probably is worth admitting, yeah, some of the effects are going to be adverse ones. About those, but also, you know, I also think, you know, movie making has changed a lot, probably from the 19th to the 20th, and now the 21st century. Can you think of other examples where maybe people made some of these same arguments, or, you know, other filmmakers maybe that are seen as great now who maybe had a more humble beginning?
Well, we need to take some things in perspective. That filmmaking as an art form is not even 150 years old. So it's not like the rules of what constitutes cinema are ironclad and can't change. The other thing is, I know that when televisions premiered or came on the scene in a mass way in the 1950s, that everybody was saying that, oh, it's going to ruin, and it did no such thing. Because, you know, it augmented it, it can change it, but it's just, we can't say, I mean, in one way I think it's incredibly arrogant to sit here and say, this is the way it should be, I've got it figured out. I think, you know, that seems totally unfair. And also Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, any sort of streaming service you can talk to, they are an opportunity for filmmakers, and they are taking risks with filmmakers that would not have been taken 5 years ago. There are visions that could not have made it to the screen that are now filling up our new releases on Netflix, and that's not a bad thing. Right.
Yeah, so I mean, I think kind of two ways you're saying that is there's greater opportunity, greater creativity. But I think about it too, you know, it's another commentary he's already made this point. You know, one thing Nolan and Spielberg have in common is they are pretty bankable box office filmmakers.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that filmmaking seems to have changed is that you don't have space as much anymore for these smaller pictures. Something's not a blockbuster or potential franchise starter. It doesn't have a space. And maybe it's a chicken and egg thing. Maybe the way that our content change has contributed to that, the way we receive content. But it strikes me as interesting that two of the people who benefit most potentially from the fact that it's a lot of blockbusters and a lot of epic pictures, and they can get any film made they want to in that way, and in a way that's crowded out maybe some of those other opportunities you mentioned that Netflix provides. You know, it's also,
yeah,
Netflix might not only be the dumping ground for direct-to-DVD stuff, but it may also be those small films that got made when we were growing up, too. Not quite those independent movies, but just those kind of quirky, eccentric things that didn't have to be huge and epic and sweeping, but just be kind of simple, fun movies to go to.
Well, let's put it this way. If Kevin Smith were making movies now, Clerks would have premiered on Netflix. 100%. Right. I mean, it would have been a Netflix phenomenon. It would not have been, you know, and it grew by word of mouth and by people, you know, slowly, but it never really got a large theatrical release. Yeah. And, you know, and part of the reason that the theaters are now overcrowded with blockbusters is pure economics. You run a movie theater, you want to make money. And you do that by booking most of your slots, because, you know, you only have, what, at most 18 slots a week, right, that you can fill how many times, 18 movies you can show. Well, if you know that you can sell out this movie in five of them, why in the world would you not fill those five?
Right. Exactly.
You know, you're trying to make money. But here's the thing for us. Like, for me, and I think the reason why the consumer is primarily going to see blockbusters is because movies is expensive. If you're taking, if it's two people, you're talking about $40. By the time you get there, you get your tickets, you get a popcorn, a cut, it's $40. And for $40, it better be something that I feel relatively sure is going to be good,
right.
That I'm going to enjoy. But now, for Netflix, I'm not out anything if I spend 2 hours and take a chance on this movie because it looks kind of interesting. But I can't afford to spend $40 to find out if it's any good.
And I think that's, again, that gets the heart of the matter. I think part of what Spielberg is arguing is there's something about seeing a movie in the theater. And we've talked about that before, too. There is something different about it.
It is a different experience. Well, I mean, you're more
and you don't
the
get
moment.
The full experience of the film, you know, if it's not shot on film, as opposed to being shot in digital or different format. Also, but here's the thing, and I heard this also in some commentary on the Major Spoilers podcast, and this is specifically where I kind of don't agree with the implication that they shouldn't be cheered for Oscars, because the people who decide who wins the Oscars, who get nominated for Oscars, they don't watch these films in the theater.
They watch
them at home, online. They, you know, there's streaming options, I think, now for them as well to do that. So if, you know, a movie can qualify because it's in theaters, but the people who judge them not based on that experience. Two, people's own, not only is it less expensive, but people can create their own home theater experience that in some places is going to be a lot better, a lot cleaner, a lot more pleasant movie-going experience than going to the theater. And then the last thing to me, too, is, you know, what's the difference in some sense? You know, Netflix, to meet the rules, may showcase their movie they're really pushing in a theater for a couple of weeks to meet the criteria to get
to qualify. They've done that. Yeah.
What's really the difference between that and in a number of the movies that are wonderful films, but for whatever reason they're not those blockbusters, and so they just appear for a couple of weeks themselves in cinemas. Because of what you said, that these theaters only have so many slots, and they want them to go to movies that make the most money. I just don't see as much of a difference there, and I wish that Spielberg would play the thread out a little bit more and say, you know, the answer here is not just for Netflix not to be considered, but to kind of look back at the industry itself and say, you know, if Netflix is providing these challenges for us, rather than kind of talk about what Netflix is doing wrong, why don't we talk about what we might need to change? What if we took the money and rather than pour it all into something like Ready Player One, you wouldn't produce like three films that Netflix was going to do?
That's right.
So that's where I kind of come up short with.
A lot of studio films have more or less tried to use award season credibility as a moneymaker. Okay? So what I mean is they'll put a movie out in a quote unquote limited release. Just in time to qualify for Oscars, with the knowledge that they're not going to roll their movie out for another 2 or 3 weeks, up to close to a month in most of them, because they're hoping that once you see that movie listed at the Golden Globes or the Academy Award, that then you might be interested. So they're hoping to use that as a way to cut through the noise to advertise their film.
Right.
And that's no different than what Netflix is doing if they put their movie out for a week to qualify. Same thing.
Same thing.
I mean, it's no different.
And I think,
at the end, you know,
again,
at the end of the day,
too,
one thing we're seeing with Spielberg is there are a lot of people in the movie industry that are in the industry part that are interested in what is the most profitable way to put this piece of entertainment out there. He has been on that part, but it sounds like he's talking more about movies from the from the prestige part, from the purity, from the art part, and all that. And it's too, you know. But here's the thing: I think Netflix is doing, and it's a great service. It is opening up the possibilities for what sort of films and what sort of things that people will watch that they would not have watched in another way. Particularly, you know, I think a couple years ago, the O.J. documentary that won Best Documentary. That documentary could not have been. It was probably, my guess is, it was watched more on streaming services than anybody saw it in a theater. And there are several movies like that. And another thing I've seen several think pieces about lately is about how people are turning to like short movies now, you know, 30-minute movies. That most of these movies, like the best live-action short at the Academy Awards, nobody's really watching those. Nobody. Like if they get 10,000 people to have seen one of those, that's a lot. And so any way you can get that delivered to people and get their eyes on it, let them see it, that cannot but be a good thing.
That's going to transition us well, I think, into our top five. But let's close this part out, though. Just with this, I want to share from The Onion. this was what they had. Of course, satire. So here's what they wrote about in one of their pieces where they asked random people on the street. Quote, Netflix movies don't deserve to share the stage with true cinema like Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Quote, the world is big enough for both E.T. and whatever E.T. ripoff Netflix plans to make. Quote, finally, somebody in Hollywood speaking about an issue Americans truly care about. I'll just say, I think where this all comes down is that it's changed. And I think where Spielberg's argument probably is the most flawed in a way is to equate Netflix purely with TV, simply because a TV screen is what a lot of people stream Netflix through.
I think
he is actually giving voice to just the way that content is changing, the way we consume that content, the way we produce that content, and it's not going to stop. And so I do think his argument's flawed, and I think if all these things are going to coexist in some way, then the movie industry at every level needs to go back and look and say, what do we need to do different in light of this?
And not kind of rage so much
about what they should stop doing.
One thing I think that people that are complaining, like Nolan, Spielberg, whoever, one thing that very few people have really tapped into is the enormous power that Netflix has to for new consumers to find classic libraries, to rediscover Close Encounters of the Third Kind or E.T. or Jaws, because you know it is a very easy way to get your content that is now 40 years old out to people in a way that they're not going to buy that DVD unless their parents showed it to them. But now you can re-expose them to it, or even if you're Martin Scorsese, you know, Raging Bull, Mean Streets, these movies, they can be re-exposed to people, and in a way that is relatively inexpensive on everybody's, put out there. And I don't see how nobody has managed to capitalize on that yet.
Well, let's move on now and capitalize. I think it's pretty obvious we think Spielberg's a bit misguided in these comments because we've seen some movies we like on Netflix, and maybe they're not quite award-worthy, but they rank high in our book. So very quickly, let's go to your top five. Top five original Netflix films, we'll say, and give them that more of an artsy kind of designation. What is number five for you, Brian?
Well, one movie that is the end, it was sometimes a little frustrating, but overall I really enjoyed, and that is a movie that came out earlier this year, A Futile and Stupid Gesture. It was a Will Forte movie about the people that founded National Lampoon and his sort of Rise and Ultimate Fall. I thought it was very good. Very good movie.
Nice. Number four.
Number four, let me look through here and see. Number four, I'm going to go with the Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected. It's an Adam Sandler movie, but it was by the director of Noah Baumbach, who did Squid and the Whale and some other kind of artsy films or whatever. And it was very good. And I think Sandler is really underrated as a dramatic actor when he wants to do so.
And he almost by himself proves Spielberg's point with some of the other Netflix fare. So it's nice to see he has another film to kind of balance that out.
Yeah. I mean, it's not The Ridiculous Six, as horrendous as that movie was. And this is speaking to somebody that actually watched it.
Number three.
Number three, I'm going to go with the Netflix movie Okja. It came out, and it was probably their first big push into maybe thinking they had a chance to win some awards. It was a big push last year, I think, at Cannes Film Festival. And it didn't really materialize for them, in part because I think they got a lot of pushback, like the stuff from Spielberg and stuff like that.
So much so that they're not going to be at Cannes again, probably for the foreseeable future.
Exactly.
Number two.
Number two is a movie that I really enjoyed about a young Barack Obama, Barry. I really liked that movie. I thought it was wonderful. Very enlightening, very kind of, opening in a way to cast I love movies that take recent past and try to redo them. So I really enjoyed it.
Really good. And a good example, I think, again, of what we pointed out, the type of film that would have been so much different if it had gotten distributed in theaters, perhaps, because it would have become something maybe a little bit more like W, by Oliver Stone or something like
that.
Yeah,
could be more.
We've had a hard time hitting that kind of
sweet spot. I mean, if you're a movie about a former president, you can't help but be somewhat political. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be that way.
Right.
But it didn't come across as being incredibly like heavy-handed. It was. I thought it was really, really well done.
All right. Well, number one must be really good to top that, and I think I might have a suspition of what it is, but share it with us.
What do you guess it is?
I'm thinking you're going to say Icarus, the Academy Award winner for Best Documentary.
It was very good, and you're right. It was eye-opening because it. The story is something unbelievable, really. This guy is trying to prove how easy it is to fool people in by doping, how easy it is to get away with it. And in the process of doing so, he meets up with this Russian doctor who he accidentally discovers is the doctor that's been doping Russian athletes for the past 20 years. And this guy opens up to him and says, I'm going to be a whistleblower now. And so he helps bring down the Russian doping scandal by accident.
Yeah.
And they're both they're filming themselves as they're worried about their lives. And it's fantastic.
A fascinating story and probably the best repudiation and probably maybe one of the catalysts for Spielberg's comments. Well, listeners, tell us what you think by going to Twitter at 10KTENKMovies or Brian's blog, 10KMovies.com. Let us know what you think. Is Spielberg right, wrong, somewhere in the middle? And what are your favorite Netflix films? Give us a shout-out. We are so thankful for y'all listening to us, coming back after all these times where we've been away. And we hope that before we hear you again, you hear us again, that your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline.